One of the focuses and one of the purposes of the Foundations class is to serve as a preparatory aid, obviously from the term of foundation, to strengthen the foundation of the teachers that are going to go forward and teach the other classes, preparation time in advance. Some people don't need that. Some people do their own preparation. Some people, this is a help and an aid to them. That's the focus of this quarter, is to help prepare everyone to go forward and to teach. It's also to ground us more thoroughly. And one of the objectives of the way that our teaching program is structured is to do that. But some of the things that I want to discuss a little bit about in conjunction with that is that the purpose of we need to familiarize new students with the Bible story. I can come in class and I can teach you one specific story out of the Bible, but if I don't put it in the context, much like we talked about the context of some other things in our last class, oftentimes the message of that will be lost, or the overall importance of that singular message might be lost. It's important as teachers that we convey, and in context, the overall message and how it plays together. If we take just the crucifixion and teach the crucifixion and the resurrection of Christ to somebody without any of the other message and context, how do you think they will receive it? Think as a story, a singular story without enough information surrounding it to help them believe this unbelievable event. Okay? So it's important to build on that. And as that relates to this, timelines. The Bible story, much of the prophecies surrounding the Bible and how those prophecies are fulfilled serve to create a believable message. Important to convey timelines throughout the history. That's one of the reasons many of the classes have timelines in them to help students understand the storyline of the Bible. The geography. You understand where something's taking place. It makes it more real. Now, in a far, far away land is how a fairy tale starts. Well, no, this starts in the land of Palestine. Abraham came out of Ur of the Chaldees, traveled up to Haran and so on, and then down into the land of Palestine. He moved down into Egypt and came back. You see the storyline building, and as you're trying to explain it to students, it builds that credibility of a story, that it actually happened, that it was a real event, it wasn't something that was made. Sure that major points are understood. Teaching a class, it's important to look at the point of the lesson. There are ancillary points that can be made from lessons, but it's important to convey the main part of the story. Telling the story of the flood, the main point of that story is wickedness of the world had gotten so bad that God decided to destroy the flood, destroy all the people of the world, but because of Noah's faith, he was saved to regenerate and repopulate. Okay? Not that, well, there was an ark and it had, how many windows did it have? Well, those are ancillary stories that can be, and points that can be made from it, but it's not about the animals, it's about the wickedness in the world. Build a foundation. The purpose of teaching new students is to help ground them and build a foundation for them to be able to move forward on. And that's giving them enough of the details, and in very early classes, it's a very small skeleton. Maybe only major points that very short key milestones that help build out the story. And we've broken that down in many cases into the 17 periods of the Bible history. If you start with that, it helps tell the overall storyline so that if you talk about David, you know, oh, well, that's in the United Kingdom. Okay? With older students, more mature students, it's helped to restudy the material because each of us knows that if we restudy something, we pick out a bit more out of it each time we do it and it becomes richer to us. Because every time we read something, we'll pick up on something that we didn't read the time before. So it's to help us to mature more thoroughly. It's also to help to pull together subtle threads that build faith. If you're reading the 17 periods of Bible history, you're not necessarily going to pick up some of the subtle threads of all of the intricate prophecies and how they're fulfilled. A more mature student needs to start to do those things. And in our classes, as students mature, we need to help tie those together and help them see that. We need to foster a passage for the message and its importance. And that needs to continue. It needs to occur for new students, but it needs to occur for older students as well who sometime begin to get in our ways and don't think of it that way. Each student needs to see the passion of the message and convey it in that light. Okay. As we move forward today, we've talked about an outline or how the story flows. I'm going to quickly go through it. We talk about how we've created a structure for hanging the Bible story on, and we refer to it as the 17 periods of Bible history. Others might break it up differently. That's how we've approached it here at Eastside for a period of time, and it follows consistently with Waldron's Bible study material and how it's presented. Before the flood, well, tells the story from the beginning of creation up to the period of Noah and the flood. We have the flood itself, a very short period, but it tells a critical change in the timeline of the history of mankind and what happened to mankind as a result of wickedness. Scattering of the people. The people were scattered, but why were they scattered? Because they were attempting to do something as a centralized group that was in contrast to what God wanted them to do at that time. They were told to go forth and populate the world, and yet they wanted to build a tower. Patriarchs. We have Abraham being called out of the Ur of the Chaldees, and we have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the growth of that, and the promises associated to each of those individuals, ends to tell the storyline. What were some of the promises that were made in that time period? Three key ones. Land, seed, and nation. And that set the stage for what to happen, for there to become a great nation, and for there to become the kings, and so on. It's important for kids to start to see that and tie it together. The Exodus, they go down into captivity, they become a great nation in that time frame. The wandering in the wilderness. Well, the wandering in the wilderness, well, they exited. Well, why didn't they go straight into the land of Canaan? Because of their hardness of their heart and unwillingness to do what God told them to do. No, weren't willing to go forward and take the land. Invasion, conquest. We see the Israelite nation almost at one of its peak times in faith and strength as they go forth and actually take, under the leadership of Joshua, the land of Canaan. During this short period there is one of their strongest times as a cohesive group. We have the period of the United Kingdom, Divided Kingdom, and I group these three together because they're, if you're looking at where the Scriptures occur, they're all intermingled within 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, and 2 Chronicles. And it's blended together if you're looking from where you're going to go and look at the Bible story. Those three occur in that time in those Scriptures. Somebody asks you, well, where are you going to go and look for the story of David? Well, you can immediately say it's one of those six books. And that's just, if you're talking with younger students, it's easier to start from there and start to build at that level of understanding. Captivity. We see Daniel and Ezekiel and Jeremiah leading up to the captivity. We have the return from captivity, years of silence, and I've added into this, this was an outline that Tracy had provided from his previous teaching, but I want to add into it, the years of silence are foretold in prophecy. Much of the events outlined that occur in the years of silence are foretold in prophecy, and they actually come to pass that way. We get the information associated with those from secular history. Life of Christ, the Gospels, okay? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John tell the majority of the story associated with that. We'll get bits and pieces of it from other books as they look back and tell the story of Christ. The early church is recorded in the book of Acts, and then the letters to the Christians carry on the first century church for the most part. That's the skeleton for which we can hang the Bible story on. Trying to pull together stories, we have that to go back and drop in a story, and each time we study it, we have another place to add in a story and help everyone understand the timeline. If someone only studies one particular portion of the Bible, said earlier, what will they miss? Context, the thread, the storyline, and the key elements that continue to build faith. Okay. From a life of Christ standpoint, in our review today, we didn't study the first half of the life of Christ. But the life of Christ can be broken up into a timeline as well. And within that, we have the first 30 years or the preparation for His ministry. We have the beginning of His ministry, 3 to 6 months. We have the Great Galilean ministry, the next 18 to 21 months. So the first 2 years, roughly, of his ministry. Periods of retirement, the next 6 months, and then we pick up with where we were starting with in our study this quarter, which is the close of His ministry. It's another 6 month period. These first four bullets cover the vast majority of His ministry. But the last 6 months and then the last week we've had a tremendous amount of information to look at and study from for messages that he was using to prepare his disciples for the ultimate event of his death and resurrection. And as we studied it, did they get it? They didn't get it all the way through. His resurrection, as we're describing the life of Christ, and then also the exaltation. So if we were looking at the life of Christ, and if you're trying to prepare your students for it, you'd look at breaking it down and giving them a skeleton to hang things on, to help them to understand where the storyline goes. We can do this with any storyline. Do that with the same thing with the life of Abraham. We could do it if we took the life of Joseph and just broke it up and told that. So it's helpful to break down storylines to give people a place to hang everything on, to give them a sequence for how it all works. Close of Jesus' ministry. I've tried to bulletize just quickly the things that we've studied this quarter. Now, we're not going to review all of these in detail. We wouldn't be able to cover them in detail, but what we want to do in today's lesson is look at some of these and pull out some of the high points associated with what we've studied from it and what it meant and why we think it was included in this. In the first instance of our story here, we studied the Feast of the Tabernacles. And as we introduced that story, Jesus was coming in to observe the Feast of the Tabernacles and there was an issue there. He came in delayed partially because why? What were the leaders already planning to do? They wanted to kill him. And when he began to tell that to his disciples, well, what did the people surrounding him say? Well, they don't, are you mad? Why do they want to kill you? I mean, the message had not gotten out to the common people at that point that his life was at jeopardy. They were still following this great prophet that they believed in. Now, did this change? Did the overall group or the overall common people's attitude change over this next 6 month period? What were the crowds shouting at his crucifixion? Crucifying, crucifying. Leaders of the people swayed the opinion of the people during this 6 months. Okay? They didn't understand what the significance was. They didn't understand the nature of his kingdom. And as a result, the leaders of the people continued to sway and change their opinion. We have the story of the adulteress that is brought to Jesus for judgment. And that adulteress was brought before him by the leaders of the people. And why? We see the theme recurring throughout this 6 month period that the leaders wanted to do what to Jesus? Tempt him and catch him, test him. I think an additional thing we could add to that is they wanted to do what to him? They wanted to discredit him. They wanted to find a way to show that he was going contrary to the scriptures. Jesus was very keen on understanding what they were trying to do with that and used it to his advantage to teach them further. In this particular instance, what did he do? Did he pronounce judgment immediately on the adulteress and say that she should be stoned as in accordance with the old law? No. He that was without sin, let him cast the first stone. Also, the first witness was what was supposed to cast the first stone. And none of those ended up doing that. What did the people do? They ended up leaving and left Jesus and the adulteress there together. What was the outcome of it? Go on and sin no more. Okay? Jesus claims to be the light of the world. In his teaching, he is describing to the people the message that they can only be saved through his message. They can only be saved through the gospel. That he is teaching them and bringing them this message. Jesus compares his father and the Jews' father. Over and over throughout this 6 month period, Jesus makes the point that if you know me, you know my father. If you know the father, you've seen him in me through the working of the miracles that I have completed. Did they understand that? What did they eventually do at his crucifixion? He claimed to be the Christ and confirmed that he was the Christ. They used the fact that he was blaspheming against God by claiming to be God. Okay? Using this time for trying to prepare them and help them understand this message, and they could not grasp the concept. Jesus heals a man born blind. And the storyline behind that is, you know, what did people choose to do with that story? Here is a man that's been blind since birth and he's been healed, and what did they complain about? He did it on the Sabbath day. Is that the point of the story, though? Jesus had done a great work for this individual. He chose it to use it as a teaching event. Was there anything wrong with him healing him on the Sabbath? Was it considered to be work? No. The Jews had created traditions and other things around that to try and set up so many bounds on what they could do during the Sabbath that they categorized this as work as well. Was not. Point was, they wanted to find something that they could condemn him on. Goes even the most miraculous of events, healing of a blind man, to choose it and twist it and use it. Okay. We see within that story, though, some other subtle themes that are important to understand why the people reacted the way that they did. What kind of pressure was being placed on that man's parents? They would be cast out of the synagogue. And that's one of the first times that we see that idea conveyed. And it helps us understand why the people like Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea reacted the way that they did in the last 6 months. There was a significant amount of pressure being placed on anyone that was following Jesus, how they would be treated socially and how they would be treated from the standpoint of further persecution. Jesus is a good shepherd, or is the good shepherd. He makes the point that the shepherd takes care of his flock, and he tends to the flock, and he is the only true shepherd of his discipleship. He sends the 70 on a mission. What was their mission? And what were they to take with them at this time? Okay, preach repentance and the coming of the kingdom, and they were to take nothing with them. That's going to contrast later on to how they were to go forward as later in the Great Commission. They were to be prepared and that they were to have things at hand so that they could take care of the mission. But here, in the mission of the 70, what did Jesus want them to rely on? God. God would provide for them and provide for their mission in order that it be taken care of. Were they able to do things at this time miraculously? They were as well. They were given the ability to do certain things that would convince the people and help sway them to understand that their message was true, that they were associated with the Christ. Parable of the Good Samaritan. This is an instance of a story that is one of the pivotal stories. We talk about key stories that young people can learn from. It would be one that you would not want to skip. The mission of the 70 might be lost on a very young age group. But the parable of the Good Samaritan be grasped by even the youngest of children. The importance of that message being that if we look at the storyline, obviously, we had the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan that all end up having an opportunity to take care of this individual in need who's been robbed and left for dead. See the response of the Levite and the priest, which was what? They ignored him. Okay? And in the telling of that story, what's the important key there? The Levite and the priest should have been the individuals that should have been the examples to all others. Should have been the most willing and the most caring to care about their fellow brethren in order to take care of them. They ignored him. The Samaritan comes by, and here's where it's important to tell things in context. If people don't understand the separation that has occurred between the Jews and the Samaritans during the divided kingdom, they won't understand the importance of the distinction between a true Jew and a Samaritan and what level of hatred occurred between those people. I emphasize timelines and threads within the story. The Samaritan was considered to be worse than dirt. They had no association with them. They would walk the other side of the street from a Samaritan. They would not talk with them. They would not hold commerce with them. They would just not have anything to do with them. And for a Jew to be taken care of by a Samaritan shows that this person had greater compassion upon fellow mankind than the Jews who were supposed to be God's people, going even that greater example. Comments on this first part of our... Okay. Jesus visits Mary and Martha. It's a very, very short story. We're talking 3 or 4 verses here. And in that story, we see that Jesus makes the point, and it's a very subtle point, what did they come away with from it? Authorities. And it's key to teach that to children. Because Mary had her priorities straight in trying to learn from Christ while he was here on this earth. Martha didn't understand that at the time, and Jesus used this opportunity of this story to teach her that lesson. Jesus, again, I've used this illustration. If you watch a movie, everything in a movie is there for a purpose. It's not part of the storyline that costs more to produce it. It doesn't make sense. But everything in the Bible story is there for a reason, to give us context and understanding to feed us on to the next thing. There's things that's been left out that could have made it even richer. But the things that we have are there for our learning and for completion. Jesus has encouraged his disciples to pray. He does so by teaching them prayer and helping them understand what they should pray. There are blasphemous accusations made against Jesus. He's accused of doing miracles by what? Beelzebub. And he makes the illustration and the point that a house cannot be divided against itself. A devil cannot work against itself. It would be contrary to understanding that. And he tried to explain that to them. We lift that phrase out. Abraham Lincoln used that phrase in the Gettysburg Address. And others have used that to help people understand that same idea, that evil would not work against evil in order to accommodate its purpose. And he also used this story to tell them, the message that's being conveyed is from God, it's righteousness, standing associated with it. Jesus condemns the Pharisees arousing their wrath, and that's a very generic thing. There's specific stories associated with this. In the 6-month period here, we see Jesus over and over condemning the Pharisees of different things. Hypocrisy within their lives, the hypocrisy within their teaching, what they were trying to hold the people to that they themselves would not even try to adhere to individually. Trying to hold the people to a higher standing than they were willing to accommodate. We have different warnings and encouragements. And I'm going to have to turn to that one because I've forgotten in my notes what that referred to. Different warnings and encouragements. Talking to them about their hypocrisy. He's talking to them about, tell you, kill the body, but you can't kill the soul. There's just different key things he's trying to teach them. And again, there's higher points that we need to get out of our lesson than some of these others. Parable of the Rich Fool. Another one of these key storylines is you try and talk about priorities and helping them understand the priorities. Parable of the Rich Fool. This is not the rich young ruler, but the rich fool. His crops had bountiful crop harvest, and he said, I'm going to build myself big barns, and I'll eat, drink, and I'll have a good life going forward. And the message to him was what? Tonight you're going to die. Those goods are going to become someone else's. And he could have taken the opportunity that he had with his possessions and so on to do as the law taught, to help take care of his fellow brethren. Lessons on attitudes toward material things, it follows in with the teaching of that particular one. And I think this is a good opportunity with students to use this to teach them that level of emphasis and understanding upon materialism versus spiritual things. Because there's a series of lessons here associated with that theme. We see the wickedness of servants and how they place them, their use of the master's goods and wastefulness of the master's goods and their behavior ahead of what they should have done. In Luke 12:35 and 48, the Lord illustration particularly is for everyone. Trustworthy wise manager whom his master has set over his household, taking care of it. And then there's those foolish stewards that would not be watchful and would not be paying attention to the master's goods, and when he returned, he would deal with them. Parables about the waiting servants and the wise steward, that's a reference to that as well. Jesus was come to bring division and not peace. Now, that's an interesting message. What kind of division are we talking about here? Is it division between the divisions? Well, it's going to bring a division between the households, obviously, because there are going to be those that choose to believe him and those that don't. But the issue is those that believe his message and those that stay with the Jewish history. It's a change in time that's going to have to come about. Change in kingdoms, a change in testaments. that are all associated with His coming, His death and His resurrection. And those people are going to have to choose between one, and it's going to set people at controversy with one another. Necessity of repentance for all, and the parable of the fig tree. The parable of the fig tree is a simple story. You know, the fig tree itself didn't bear any fruit, and the master of the field came in and said, "Well, it's not bearing any fruit. Let's just cut it down." Now, the parable is relating that to what? What does the fig tree represent? Jewish nation, okay? And what did the groundskeeper there choose to ask the master to do? Give it some time. Let me do what to it? He was going to dig around it. He was going to fertilize it. He was going to prune it back. He was going to prep it to do everything he could to try and bring it along. And then, if it did not respond, what would be done to it? Cut down and cast into the fire. See that parallel? Jesus coming into the at this time and teaching the people is preparing them. And this up through the destruction of Jerusalem, if you consider it, is a preparatory time where if you compare the fig tree to the Jewish nation, there is a particular period of time where they are being groomed and being prepped and being prepared to accept the word, and if they won't, cast into the fire. Jesus withdraws to Perea. We have other instances here. He's criticized again for healing a crippled woman on the Sabbath. They're criticizing him for doing work and see that he teaches on his journeys. Jesus used every bit of the time that he had to be able to teach his disciples. We see instances where he's walking along and he's talking and teaching his disciples, multitudes that would be following him as well. I think that's a subtle theme that you can teach to the students as well. Jesus used his time wisely. The time that he spent on this earth there, I doubt very seriously that there was very slack time where throughout his ministry. And if it was, he used it in a subtle way through prayer. He may have been involved in prayer himself, but his disciples saw that he was using it way to prepare himself. He withdraws to Perea, where he continues to teach at the time, but it separates himself from Jerusalem because what did they want to do to him in Jerusalem? Kill him. And it wasn't time yet. Heals another man on the Sabbath, and again is criticized for healing that man on the Sabbath in this timeline. Multitudes are warned about the cost of the discipleship. What cost would there be associated with discipleship? It could be death. It could be the family members. It could be the persecution associated with their social lives, casting out of the synagogues. All of those things tied together. Students today need to take heed to that same set of lists. Is there going to be a cost of discipleship today? Potentially. Yes, there will be. If you were to choose to be a Christian in Saudi Arabia, would there be a cost associated with it? Absolutely. If you were to choose to be a Christian in Salt Lake City, could there be a cost associated with it? There could be. Because, and I'm not trying to... The Mormons have a very strong hold in Salt Lake City. And if you're not a Mormon, you may have a hard time finding a job in Salt Lake City. Those are types of things that Christians need to be aware of, and that there are potentially are going to be costs associated with it, and we need to be prepared to deal with those costs of discipleship and accept them. In the parables of the lost sheep, there's a common theme throughout these. The lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. What is that common theme associated with each of those parables? The law, the value of the soul, the value of the lost one, joy upon return. There's no doubt about that, that you can see that in the parable of the prodigal son. You can see that when the lost sheep is returned, and you see that in the rejoicing of the woman of the finding of the single coin. Okay? It's in understanding that, the parable of the prodigal son is a key story for young students to understand and benefit from. To see how someone can fall away, in spite of having been taught their entire life, can fall away and choose to do something contrary to what their family would want them to do, and yet finally come to a realization that what they're doing is wrong, and that they'd be better off coming back to their father, coming back to their family, coming back to God, draw the overall parallel, coming back to God and serving Him faithfully. Servant. Which the son was willing to do when he came back out of the story. He was willing to come back and be a servant in his own father's house. How was he received, though? This is the contrary for both the father, obviously the father's reaction, but how everyone should react on the return of a lost soul. Opened him back with open arms and was excited about it. So much so that he had an overall feast for him and was willing to encourage him. We see the contrast, though, of this fellow brother's attitude, and it shows us what our attitude shouldn't be as a fellow brother. We should be rejoicing as well that that soul has returned. That's a very good story to convey a lot of common themes associated with how we should treat one another as brothers and sisters, and how we should treat someone's soul, how much value we should place on that individual's soul. Hook heed to that. Helps solve a lot of problems sometimes. Parable of the unjust steward. Parable of the rich man and Lazarus. I think this is a very good story from the standpoint of young people. They will see the contrast. It also helps introduce some of the concepts associated with punishment and where individuals go after death and how they're associated with that. Those are subtle stories in that, but it helps, as your older students, it will help them understand that theme greater. Parable of the unprofitable servant. Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. Wow, what's important about that? Not a very long story. But it's the beginning. It shows God had power over what? Death. Okay? Now, what's the difference, though, between Lazarus being raised from the dead and Jesus being raised from the dead? Lazarus had to die again. Okay? What did the Jews and the Jewish leadership want to do associated with this story? They wanted to kill not only Jesus, but they wanted to kill Lazarus because Lazarus was testimony to the fact that Jesus had power beyond belief. And there was no controversial, no way to discredit what he had done, because what had Lazarus been? Dead for 4 days and buried. Okay. Jesus healed 10 lepers, and what's the storyline behind that? Main thing behind that story is one of thankfulness and gratitude. Okay? Nature of the kingdom is explained. And he uses this on more than one occasion to help his disciples understand the nature of the kingdom. Just like it was, we're studying this. It takes multiple times. His disciples never understood fully the nature of the kingdom until probably the coming of the Holy Ghost upon them. I'm sure that they got the sense of it greater after his death and after it continued to appear to them and take that time to teach them further. The Pharisee and the publican story told of the Pharisee and the publican that are gone forth to pray, and we see the Pharisee as he prays saying, I'm thankful that I'm what? Not like this publican. But the publican turns around and says what? Merciful to me. Contrast is so much importance there is that our attitudes need to be like that of the publican and not like that of the Pharisee. Not comparing ourselves to other man and other men, but to what we're doing and what God expects of us individually. There is teaching in this period that Jesus gives concerning divorce. It's important. It's important here because it's one of the things that seems to affect our generation significantly. Prior generation, well, I won't say that. What problem did the Jews have? They were divorcing their wives and taking younger wives. Well, throughout timelines, there's been differing levels of stigma associated with divorce. There's been different teaching on divorce. Today, it is very prevalent. It is important to start instilling in young people what the Bible actually teaches on divorce to begin with. It wasn't the intent from the beginning. Only one reason for which people should, well, not should, for which they are allowed to divorce. The rich young ruler. He came to Jesus. He asked him what he should do to be saved. What did Jesus tell him? Well, first off, what did he ask him though? What had he kept the commandments? And he said, I've done all these things for my youth. And then he said, what? Go sell all you have and give to the poor. What was the response? Went away sorrowful. The key thing to bring to students and helping them understand here is again his emphasis on priorities. Rich young ruler had such a great attachment to his earthly life and wealth that he was not willing to place the spiritual above that. The death and resurrection is foretold. We have the example of Jesus coming out of the temple and telling about, they ask him about the temple and how great it was, and he said, in 3 days I'll destroy this temple and raise it up yet again. He's talking about his death and resurrection and teaching them associated with that. Jesus rebukes the selfish request of James and John, who asked that they be set on the right hand in the kingdom. We see the sight of Bartimaeus and his companion being restored. Jesus meets Zacchaeus and goes and has a meal with him. People criticizing him associated with it. And now we get down to the last week segment, which is what we've been studying most recently. So when the time expires here, we won't feel bad that we didn't cover all of it. Jesus arrives in Bethany. He begins to prepare his disciples. We see the triumphal entry where he tells his disciples to go and get the donkey for him to be able to ride in. We see the people receiving him, the masses and the multitudes receiving him excitedly. Later, and they're yelling, "Crucify him!" The barren fig tree is cursed because Jesus wanted to have something to eat off of it. He cursed it. It's an illustration of how the more general theme of how the people themselves were not bearing fruit, how they would be cursed. It also showed his power over nature, his power, and his disciples recognized that on the second day when they came back through and saw what of the fig tree? Dead. Okay? Jesus cleanses the temple and makes the point to the people that what had they done to the temple? Turned his father's house into a den of thieves. Certain Greeks asked to see Jesus. He talks to them and speaks with them. In contrast to what the Jews wanted, what would they say about anyone that would talk to a Greek? Not to have anything to do with them. Greeks were to be avoided. But what was it a general message to point out? The message was going to be extended to all, not just to the Jews. We have the chief priests, the scribes, and the Sanhedrin come to challenge Jesus' authority. He refutes them. They question him about paying tribute to Caesar. And he says what? Whose inscription is on it? This is a good story about teaching young people about how to deal with questions as well in a way to help teach others. We talk about underlying themes. If you wanted to look specifically and teach students at an older age about how to approach teaching, you can look at the example of, you could have an entire segment of lessons on how did Jesus choose to teach. Use the scriptures, but oftentimes he used them in a way of turning around a question back to someone to help them think and bring out the correct answers. Not like he's just standing over there pointing his finger at them the entire time. They end up convicting themselves because of their own answers. This is an example of that. Sadducees question Jesus on the resurrection. It's another good example of how to use teaching methods to convict people. And thank you for your attention.